Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning, and welcome to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media and NPR. I'm your host, Ijaz Jasil, and today we are talking about the home buying process, particularly the barriers and the difficulties that first-time home buyers and home buyers who have other barriers may face as well. For example, those who are non-native English speakers. We have a very robust and diverse community in Buffalo, which is beautiful, but which can also make some aspects of life a little bit trickier to navigate. Thankfully, I've got two experts here who can help with some of those folks who may be finding the home buying process to be a little bit stressful. I have from Five Star Bank, Community Development Loan Officer Takesha Mutswinga, and Director of Mortgage Jim Ahrens. Thank you so much, Takesha and Jim, for joining me this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
All right, so I'm really excited to get into this conversation, but first I just want to talk about what we're seeing here in Buffalo as a whole. We have a very unique market for home buying, and we're definitely seeing a lot of odd things play out on a national scale, but locally as well. For those who are walking into the home buying process right now, exactly what are they getting themselves into here in Western New York?
Well, I probably can kick that off. I mean, when you think about what's gone on in the market nationally and locally over the last 5 years, it's been fascinating. Nationally right now, it's actually the sales prices in the country are beginning to go down in certain markets. You're reading about this probably in the newspaper or online. But locally, that's not happening in Western New York. Sales prices continue to go up, and that's all about the lack of supply that exists in the market today. And the lack of supply, actually, kind of the roots of that go back to the pandemic, with what was going on in the economy and what the monetary policy was for our country to get us through that period of time. Interest rates were at all-time lows, and you have now currently, 5 years later, this lock-in effect. So you've got 70% of all homeowners out there are sitting on mortgages with interest rates below 5%. So there's no incentive for people to sell their current house. Hmm. And that's just locked in the market. And as a result, the housing supply is at an all-time low. However, in Buffalo, over the last year and a half, it is starting to kind of expand somewhat. You know, active inventory is up about 10% year over year. And we're starting to feel that here locally. Which is really in contrast to what's going on nationally.
Okay. You mentioned something interesting, though, because we hear a lot of times Western New York, particularly Buffalo, being one of the most affordable places to buy a home, but we still have some of those barriers and some of those extra expenses that I think a lot of people don't account for. And then looking here also, the sort of, not to get a little too off track here, but the contrast between incomes and the cost of homes here. Affordability is something that can be a little trickier. Can you talk about that?
Sure. You know, going back to, say, 2021, I was taking a look at our pipeline. And our average, you know, when you think about first-time home buyers or low to moderate income borrowers, and that's what Keisha focuses on every day, our average loan sizes 5 years ago were in the $150,000 range, which means those average entry-level homes were probably priced in the 160 to 170 range. And, you know, average loan sizes were around 140. Well, now, 5 years later, the average loan sizes are up to over $200,000. Those sales prices are up into the mid-200s. So, you know, whereas a $135,000 mortgage 5 years ago at 3%, that principal and interest payment would be a little bit less than $600. Now it's more than double that.
Wow.
Think about that, right? So the payments have just gone up dramatically. Inflation continues to rise, all these other different costs, borrowing costs, student loans, credit card debt, et cetera, and it really, really makes it tough for people to kind of get into that first time home. And Keisha sees that every day.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I will say definitely the monthly payments, when you combine the high purchase price with the high interest rates, it's very difficult for someone who's working class. I mean, I'm talking working 40 hours plus a week. It can be very difficult. If you couple that with student loans, and the way that we calculate student loans, that also could be a problem. One of the things I like to do with my customers, in particular with what's going on with student loans and all of the back and forth about it on the federal level, is I try and educate them so when they come to me and they're ready to be pre-qualified or they're thinking about it and they're not ready, that's where I kind of put on my, you know, the underwriting knowledge that I've gained. And I say, okay, I noticed that your student loans aren't on a payment plan. So what you want to do is, and I walk them through it, like let's get in touch with a servicer. You know, you want to go online. I give them the websites that the government has available. And you want to sign up for the payment plan that's best for you. That's going to help you. Because if you don't, if you have $75,000, $100,000 in student loan debt, I have to count, you know, 0.5% of that unpaid balance towards your monthly debt, which could have a very big adverse effect as opposed to them getting on an affordable payment plan and having a lower monthly payment. There are some times where you'll see different credit factors. We work with a lot of community agencies here in Buffalo and Niagara County to help customers because they offer services around credit counseling, helping them with budgets and ensuring that they do things that can also help. Because the goal is when you're prepared, when you're getting ready to buy a home, you want to make sure, of course, that your income is stable. You know, you want to try and solidify a full-time stable income. You want to maintain that for 2 years. You want to make sure that you are also looking at your credit, and that's where the agencies come in, and they can really help them get their credit on track if they've had some bumps in the road, and help you pay off some things, like if you haven't had any bumps. But maybe you have credit cards, and you'll see this where there's a credit card, $200 unpaid balance, but the monthly payment is $70. Well, if they pay that $200 off, you know, before they come and be pre-qualified, that doesn't have to count against them. So little things like that we all work together and help make sure that we get them ready for. And it's a lot easier to do if you have relationships with your community partners and you guys are working more in sync so that you're creating a path for the customer that's going in one direction instead of back and forth.
Mm-hmm. You did mention something very interesting about credit, and I wanted to ask about credit history and how important of a role that plays in the home buying process. Because with someone who is a first-time home buyer, whether it's a younger person or someone who is newer to the area, that can be a very real fear that either my credit isn't good enough or I don't have enough credit. What are some ways that people are navigating that?
Go ahead.
We do have a wide variety of products now available. So there are products to accommodate non-traditional credit, meaning that, say, and you will see this a lot with our recent immigrants, where they are very disciplined with their credit, but the credit history itself is short. So maybe they'll have one credit card or one car payment with 12 months, and that's it, right? But now with a lot of our products that we have, like the Home Possible, the home for you that can help with non-traditional credit, we can still work with those types of credit profiles. What is considered an actual valid FICO score is when you have three different credit trade lines that have been reviewed for at least 12 months on your credit. So depending on what system we're using, if we're running it through Freddie Mac or FHA, you may still get an accept. And if that's the case, that's fine. We just follow the readings. Whatever the feedback is from that product, we'll follow that feedback in regards to your credit. If there's a case to where they don't have any credit, there's not one trade line, no FICO score, then we have our product, The Home For You, where they would provide us with 12 months bank statements showing, and then their 12 month statements for, say, for instance, their Progressive auto insurance. And they would show, you know, the 12 months payments coming from their bank statement, as well as the account from Progressive showing that it's actually their account. And then your rental also counts as a source of credit. So that's what we call non-traditional credit, because that allows people, if you're a recent immigrant, or some people, I see it with also some of my older customers, where they're just adverse to credit. They don't want to have a lot of credit. That helps to accommodate them.
Wow, that's great. And it's also great in the context, not just a first time home buyers, but in diversifying the profile of homeowners. You know, we've heard a lot of things historically about these certain barriers that were put in place due to, you know, redlining, other practices that are outlawed now. But federal and state probes have showed, especially here in Western New York, for some reason, there are still those remnants. There are still those kind of issues we face. So I'm definitely interested in learning more about how some newer practices or policies by way of mortgage lenders are helping groups that have been historically marginalized or underrepresented in home ownership. How are we sort of working to reconcile that so that everybody does have that chance at the American dream?
One of the things that I do, I honestly treat every customer the same. That's always like the easiest way to resolve that. Yeah. And the way that I approach it is, I understand that when you come to me and you're a first-time home buyer, that this is not something you do every day. This is very difficult. They don't know anything. They just know, I want to buy a home. I'm renting now. A lot of times I hear, you know, my rent has gone up. My rent has gone up again. And there's a real lack of control there that people, it makes you uneasy. And rightfully so. And so when they come to me, I always offer options. How do you want to meet? Do you want to meet in person? Would you like to meet? I've done in person, by phone. I've done Zoom meetings for people who don't have schedules that can accommodate, like, the branch hours. I've met people after branch hours, you know, in particular with a lot of my immigrant customers because of the hours that they work. And so we'll meet at a coffee shop, or, you know, I've went to some customers where we've met at their home, like when they were referred by a realtor. And we sit there and I walk them through the process. So I basically start with, what do you want to buy? If they're wanting to buy a two unit, a one unit. I also give people, sometimes people will come to you and they'll say, I want to buy a single family home. And you'll notice maybe it's a single young person, and you ask them, like, what are their reasonings behind it? And they just want to buy a single family. They don't really have a reason. So then I ask them things. Well, have you ever considered buying a two unit? And then I explain to them the benefits of that. Because one of the things that we have to realize is that sometimes maybe that choice is because that's the only choice they think they have. Mm-hmm. So you want to educate them on some of the benefits. And I'll speak to them basically about what I've learned and from what my experience in doing my job. And I will explain to them, well, you know, when you buy a two unit, you can stay in this two unit for, you know, 3 years, 5 years. When you get married or you decide that you want to start a family and go and buy a single family home, you can now keep this two unit And now this two unit has become essentially an asset for your family because you have the rental unit that you were earning income from the moment you bought the property. And now we can also utilize the unit you're vacating as rental income.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said education,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's, I know it sounds cliche, but you're educating one borrower at a time. What we're trying to do to answer your question in a different way is to provide the tools for the folks like Keisha to have to be able to assess the borrower's situation and not set them up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Several of our programs require pre-purchase home education,
counseling.
We have a home savings club for people that maybe they don't have enough money saved yet, but they can kind of work towards that. We have some programs where we have grants at closing, below market interest rates. So to try to extinguish the sins of the past, you know, we've got this broad array of tools for people like Keisha, and then we have other community development loan originators throughout our footprint that are kind of creating that access and connecting with the community and with the agencies to spread the word.
And it's a diverse product line. I always say that because it really is. I can't tell you how many times, even just this year, with the interest rates being the way that they have been, where I've had to take a person who's had like some credit issues, and although the Home Possible has the lowest interest rate, I've moved them to our neighborhood loan with a slightly higher interest rate, but no private mortgage insurance, because private mortgage insurance, what you're going to pay is based on your credit. So if your credit is not so great, it can really create a problem in terms of increasing their monthly payment. Because one of the first things you want to ask someone, especially working class, is I just think of myself, what would be most important to me buying a home? I need to know, what do I have to bring to close, and what is my monthly payment going to look like? Because long after closing, that monthly payment matters.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the interest rate on this product is like, say, 5.875, but the interest rate on this one is 6.375, if that 6.375 means that my monthly payment is about $250, $300 less, that's more important to a working class person.
So it really is looking at it on a case-by-case basis.
Yes.
The other thing is, too, is that there's a, in our industry, unfortunately, there's a big emphasis on volume, right? Get the deal in the door,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the things that we're really proud of is that the way that we're structured in the back office is that once Keisha originates that loan, first of all, she stays involved. But secondly, she doesn't have to stay involved because we have a community-oriented team that processes the mortgage, underwrites the mortgage. We have a Hispanic-speaking individual on that group. So we'd like to think at Five Star, it's a very holistic experience from beginning to end. And we're kind of trying to handle each customer with kid gloves and try to provide them super great service, no different than somebody that was borrowing $2 million from us, right? You know, so, and I think we deliver that every day.
We do. One of the things that I do is I like to analyze their income and their asset documents and really make sure that when we're at pre-qual stage, that we are looking at a realistic snapshot of your scenario. Because that is really important. People are nervous, especially first-time home buyers. And the worst thing that could happen is for us not to be really diligent in the beginning, and then it creates a problem further into the process for them. And then now you have more people involved. And so I always thought that that's really the most important way to go. I always work worst-case scenario. So for me, if I'm estimating your homeowner's insurance, it's going to be, if there's an average range for our area, I'm leaning toward the higher. Because what I want to happen is when you get your quote, it to come in less than what I estimated. So that we are always working you toward closing without any surprises that are going to be adverse. The way we are structured in our back office, my community pod, which is the group, the team that deals with the community loans, they deal with first-time homebuyers, they deal with low to moderate, they deal with all of our grant agencies. So when I am working with a community partner and they bring me on board and say, hey, we've got a new grant that we want to tell you about, I always say, you know, make sure I get all of the overlays for that grant. What are the rules? I send them to my team in the back office so that they're aware of that grant, what the rules are, how it works. When my customers come through the door, we try and present everything that could be a critical error to the file, like all of that has been addressed up front. And by them knowing the rules of the grants, whether it's the City of Buffalo grant or is the New York State Home grant, we want to make sure that our team understands the rules and the overlays for that grant program so that they could apply that when we are processing and underwriting the loan and we don't have any problems that can occur that would have an adverse impact on the customer.
Beautiful.
You know, you mentioned, you know, how important is credit, and it's super important. She answered that question beautifully, right? Thin file credit, we have solutions for that. No credit doesn't mean you have bad credit. Mm-hmm. But we also, and not just Five Star, but other banks in the area, mm-hmm. Secure credit cards to help people rebuild their credit. When they come to Keisha, they might not be ready, right? So, you know, certainly the pre-approval, working with the counseling agencies, maybe getting a secure credit card to kind of strengthen that profile.
And I do. I have. So when I talk to you, every customer doesn't automatically go to pre-qualification. I have a conversation with them. And if they're not ready, then I am very honest and I make sure that I'm reassuring because I want them to not, you know, that's a huge letdown. If someone tells you, okay, you may not be quite ready yet. And I don't want that to discourage them. And you have to be careful to make sure that it's not discouraging them and tell them, look, this is not no, this is just not yet. And then we're going to map out a roadmap and we're going to get you there. And so one of the things I do is I do a soft introduction to one of my agencies. I'll give them options, you know, I'll tell them about each agency, which would they prefer. And then I do a soft introduction and hand them off to the agency and let them know what it is that I saw that they needed to work with. One of the other things that I do is I offer them the option of the Home Savings Club account. It's a savings club account that is, it functions like a match savings account where the customer will save a minimum of $1,000 for a minimum amount of months of 10 months, and they can go up to 24. And then once they actually start a loan application and they're closing with us, we match that with $3,000. And then that can be layered. It can be layered with any other grants that you have. In fact, we have people right now who have the Home Savings Club match that they're getting. They have like a grant with the city. Yeah, Home Buyer Dream grant. And they're layering multiple grants because my goal is to ensure that I'm looking at two things. I want to try and make their monthly payment as low as possible, and I also want to try and make their cash to close as low as possible. Because even if they have savings, things happen right after you buy a home. I want them to walk away. I want to set them up for success. Do they have savings left so that if something happens after they buy the house, that they can take care of it without too much stress? So that's the way I look at grants, as a real opportunity for that.
Beautiful. Well, this sounds like a perfect time to take a short break. When we come back, we will talk more about the first-time home buying process here on What's Next. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media and NPR.
Public media starts here, in our neighborhoods, our schools, our city halls, where decisions meet real life. BTPM NPR's local reporters are asking the questions that matter, listening to the people affected, and explaining what it all means for our region.
There's a lot of poor record keeping. There are records that list that don't reconcile with other lists. There's a lot of gasoline that's being used that isn't properly accounted for. And there are a lot of people with take-home vehicles.
That's Erie County Comptroller Kevin Hardwick. He's outlining just a few of the issues his office found when conducting an audit of the county's vehicle fleet.
From paper trails to public impact, this is journalism that stays with the story and with the community it serves. Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, produces journalism with depth, care, and purpose. This is public media.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on BTPM NPR, enjoying world-class performances on BTPM Classical, discovering new local artists on BTPM The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on BTPM PBS, public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back, and thanks so much for joining us here on What's Next. I'm with Takesha and Jim from Five Star Bank. We're talking some of the barriers of first-time home ownership, and this is really a Takesha question next up, because I understand that you work with a lot of individuals who are from non-native English-speaking communities, and we have quite a robust population here in Buffalo. Out of our 260,000 plus population, about 19% of people over the age of five speak a language other than English. And 8% of those individuals report not speaking English very well. Language in and of itself, when it comes to home buying, even to native English speakers, can be kind of like foreign. So for someone who is not, you know, a native English speaker, can you explain some of those barriers, even maybe anecdotally, someone who you've dealt with who has had a hard time navigating the process because of the literal language barrier?
Yes, it definitely is an issue. I always think how it must be if we went somewhere and we couldn't speak the language or read the language. I kind of stumbled into my client base, and it's just kind of grown. And I think one of the biggest aspects of it is my willingness to meet with clients for the first time in person. Like, I just say, do you want to meet in person? And I have them come down to the branch, or I'll meet them at their home with the realtor. A lot of times the realtor speaks the language, or have someone in their office who does as well. And we kind of meet at their home and help them through it, or we meet at my office. Even though they don't understand the language, they have either someone with them, whether it be their realtor or one of their older children who speak English as well. And I'm just very patient. Like, I'll explain it. I illustrate. You know, I go slow. Whenever I meet with someone that English is not their first language, even if it is their first language and they're just first-time homebuyer and they're really nervous, and I can tell that they really are going to want us to take our time, I book them for an hour, hour and a half, depending on the situation. And we sit and I tell them what to bring with them in advance. And we sit and we go through each thing. They're not rushed. I wait and let them explain what their concerns are and see what they need more information on. And there's been times where you have to explain it in different ways. And I've just been very patient. I think because of the way that I think, I know I want to understand when I do something. So I appreciate when people are patient.
Absolutely. And in addition to those sorts of barriers, just the way that the housing market looks right now with the low inventory, as you all spoke on earlier, how difficult of a concept is that explaining to someone, as opposed to why it may not be so easy to find a home as soon as you get approved for that mortgage?
The biggest difficulty explaining to them actually is the system itself, our credit system, believe it or not. It's not, and I don't mean credit in the sense of like our credit score, just the system itself. I had a client from Iraq, and the idea of just, I have this amount of money, I want to buy this home, their system is set up differently. So the idea that they've picked the home, they want to buy the home, they've gotten the contract, what do you mean? Now we need to go through this and this, and maybe they'll accept it, maybe they won't. Like, all of that was very, it was not a concept that was easy. And I explained to them how we do it and why we do it. And then I take it a step further. I start explaining like the bank accounts. And with a lot of my clients, I'll find like even now on the way over, I received a text from a client from Burma who bought a home from me 2 years ago. And now they were looking to open up a business. And so they're contacting me and they were asking me questions because he knew like I'll look it up. I'll send him information on different options and different programs that are out there. Because I always tell them, okay, let's look and see what's out there in the community in regards to that can help you. Maybe there are some grants available, and then we could pair those with loans and things like that. So I maintain a relationship a lot of times with them, even beyond the closing. They'll still come back to me. There is a lot of trust. I don't know if you say that your name was Swahili, if you're like from that part of the world, but there is a lot of trust in old cultures. Once trust is established, that's really important. And so if you honor trust, it's always reciprocated back. And so that's a big deal to me. When someone trusts me and they come to me, they're coming to you because they trust you. So if I don't have the answer, I say, I'm not really for sure about that, but let me make some phone calls and I'll get that information and get back to you. You know, or if I know how to direct them, I'll direct them. And that stems from the relationship that we had during the process of buying the home, because I would have to explain, this is what the homeowner's insurance is for, and this is why you use it, and this is why we need it the day we close. And I would like work with them, and if they couldn't find something, I would send them people that I'll send them a few people. These are a few people that I know are reputable. Meet with them, and whichever one you like, go with them.
I definitely understand trust being a huge part of the home buying process, especially because it can be daunting and there can be a lot of obstacles to navigate. I'm curious to hear from both of you. In this process, at what point do you feel like people want to give up, and how do you sort of hold their hand through that to help them continue on the home buying process?
I would say the number one thing that I've seen is really looking for homes after they get pre-qualified. The market is tough. It is so tough right now. I even recently bought a home a few years ago, and it was tough for me. Like, I literally told my agent, you know what, after I lost the last offer, I was like, let's just circle back in a few years. It was really tough. It just comes to that, I've had clients where they're like, I've lost six offers. So then I'll call the realtor and we'll have a conversation, and then I'll try and game plan with them and see, is there something I could do on your next offer? Can you tell me who the listing agent is? Like, just anything that I could do to let them know. Maybe I'll reach out to them and say, hey, the way I do my pre-qualifications, it's really solid. I've looked at pay stubs. I've looked at, and I go over anything to help them so that they're a stronger candidate. Because with a working class person, their pockets are only so deep. So you can't just always outbid someone with money. There has to be another reason why the seller choose you. And that's why I offer those things. But that's definitely the hardest part for a lot of people. And if they're working with like outside grant agencies, and that's why I try to make sure I develop a really good relationship with the agencies that distribute grant funds, and have your contact person as a loan officer that you work with and you have a working relationship with, and you've created a system with them so that you can kind of alleviate that stress so the person doesn't feel like they're going back and forth and they're like, wait a minute, I just sent this to this person at this agency, and now I have to send it to you. So I like to interject, and when they tell me they're applying for a certain grant, I reach out to the agency, the coordinator who handles it, and I'll say, okay, so When we get the loan estimate and this and this and that, I'll send those to you. Just let me know. Or if they've received documents from the customer, I'll say, can you just forward those to me, or vice versa, just to help with the frustration. Because remember, the goal is you want to keep the customer moving in one direction, not going back and forth.
Right. And I was wondering, how linear is that direction? I want to zoom in a little bit more on the entire process, from the credit to the paperwork to actually searching for that home. Can you give me a sort of breakdown of what that process looks like and the timeline?
Well, why don't we start from the point of somebody has put in an offer, they've won the bid, and now they've applied with Keisha. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the process could be abbreviated if they had done a pre-approval with her, but if not, right, if it's starting from scratch, right, that process can take a couple of hours. Okay. But once the paperwork is gathered, once she finishes originating the loan, it then gets the loan then gets sent into our loan registration team, who will call the customer, go through the loan estimate with them, collect the credit report and appraisal fees. Okay, that happens and has to happen and be disclosed within 3 days of application. Okay, we have an electronic signature process for the loan estimate and the notice of intent to proceed and all these regulatory requirements that have to occur in those first few days. Once you get past that milestone, that first 3 or 4 days, then it would go into our processing team, where on average, you know, the file will be with the processor for 14, 20 days.
Okay.
Then it gets into the underwriter. The underwriter will review it. You know, underwriting a loan is actually not that time consuming, but there's so much paperwork that goes into producing the commitment letter and writing out conditions and things like that. That might take a day or so. Then the commitment letter goes out. There's probably additional paperwork that needs to be gathered before you can clear the loan to close. So now we're probably 30 days into that process. Commitment letter's out. The contracts are typically in Western New York being written to close within 60 days. Okay. So the borrower continues to provide the paperwork that the bank needs. It eventually gets handed off to the closing team. The closing team then works with the closing attorneys, and they go to closing. So the typical process is geared in, you know, Western New York, New York State, it's an attorney state. The attorneys drive the writing of the title insurance policies that are all required at those closings. So we're on a 60-day cycle, whereas in other parts of the country, it's in 30 days, okay? I'm pleased to say that with our process and with the quality of the loans that Keisha originates, last month our average cycle time for the community pod was 45 days. So, but for your listeners out there, it's definitely once the loan has been submitted, the loan application, it's a 45 to 60 day process.
And one thing that is very key is how complete your application is at the start. And that's why I gather a lot of things at pre-qualification. One of the things that I do actually before I send it in to the registration team is I send an email to my client. It's going to have all the additional things that I see that might be pending, like your quote for your insurance. Go ahead and start shopping. I tell them the next steps about the registration team. I give them our process journey map, so that they can see how the process flows. And then more often than not, honestly, anything that's on the list, they send it to me while I'm in the process of sending the application in. And so I send everything in, because the goal is I want to send in your 30 days pay stubs, your 2024 and your 2025 W-2s, because it's 2 years W-2s, and your 2 months bank statements at the time that I turn in your application. That makes a huge difference. Once the team gets an application, really, that's completed with the complete supported documents that could be provided at that time, it makes a huge difference in the process. Once your processor gets it and it's in that condition, you know, she's reaching out to that person really quickly. Our community pod processor last week, I turned in an application, and it was like within 4 days. You know, she was already submitting it. As soon as the appraisal came back, she submitted it into underwriting. So it was well below 14 days. But that was because the customer was really good about making sure that all of her 30 days pay stubs were there and everything at the application.
Yeah. And, you know, in this day and age, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of, you know, digital mortgages, the Rocket Mortgage, and places like that. And that, those processes are out there. They're alive and well. We offer them. All right. But as Keisha mentioned, how do you want to transact with us? Do you want to do it over the telephone? Do you want to do it face-to-face? Mm-hmm. We have a digital mortgage app. We have an e-signature process. But one of the things that we pride ourselves on is our five-star experience is leveraging that technology, meeting the customer where they want to be met. But then also there's a human element. I said, you know, after Keisha hands it off, it's not just, oh, it's all just email. You know, we make a bona fide effort to reach out to the customer at right. various different moments that matter during the transaction. The first one was the one I spoke on earlier, right? You know, we're going to be disclosing the final terms of this transaction and we need to collect some fees from you, right? There's a phone call there.
Right.
Then there's a phone call from the processor when they receive the file introducing themselves. Then there's a phone call from the processor, oh, I've submitted your loan to underwriting, because that's a big deal. Then there's a phone call, oh, you've been approved. There's a phone call that you're not been cleared to close. And then there's that final phone call that we have you scheduled in 3 days. So, you know, that's unique to us. I'm sure some banks do it. A lot of other banks are fully automated and it's very impersonal. And that's not the experience that we strive for at Five Star.
And we have, so we do have where you can upload your documents directly when you go onto the website, complete your app. And some people do that. Normally with first-time home buyers, though, they prefer the personal touch. A lot of times, so if you get someone where they're just doing a home equity or they're a return buyer, then they just want to go, let me go to the website, let me upload everything. Mm-hmm. But so we have both options.
Yeah.
But it's just with our first-time home buyers, it's really important to be transparent. Our team, after they speak with the loan processor, she's going to send them an email. It's going to have everybody's contact name and information that they're working with, who their underwriter is, who their loan officer is, processor, closer. Like, and that's very important because I even having gone through it recently, I remember feeling like you want to know who everyone is. So it's that's an important thing. For people to feel like they know who my processor is, who my underwriter is. And more often than not, they are being contacted by the processor and the loan officer so much that it's rare that they even reach out to their underwriter. But they have that information and the option if they want to.
Keeping it personal, I definitely imagine one of the most important components of this experience. Very fascinating conversation. We will get right back into it here on What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We'll be waiting for you right here after this short break.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community by keeping you informed and connected to your community. Whether it's by learning the power of Thanksgiving from the Haudenosaunee.
And it really helps us to reset and reground ourselves in that perspective of gratitude and abundance, which is the core of our, what we call Ganaquillo or Ganagohio, the good mind.
Or keeping up on local sports teams on Skin in the Game with John Simperman and Tim O'Shaughnessy.
How would you describe the growth of basketball in Canada and the popularity of basketball in Canada over the last 30 years now for the Raptors, right?
Yeah. When I was a head coach at Niagara, this would have been 93 or 94, and they announced that Toronto was going to get an NBA franchise. I remember we had a staff meeting, and I said to my assistant coaches, this is the new frontier.
This is Public Media.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Thank you so much for continuing this conversation with us here on What's Next. We're talking the home buying process, and I want to ask a question that is very honest. We've, for many decades, viewed homeownership as the American dream. I'm wondering if it is still the American dream, and in your honest opinion, is homeownership for everyone?
Let me take that one.
Yeah.
You know, that is a fascinating question. You know, I'm 35 years into my career. I've sat on some working groups with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and, you know, some of the things that led up to the great financial crisis back in 2008. There was Fannie Mae had this goal, 75% home ownership, you know, within the decade. And, you know, what I ended up seeing was a lot of guidelines that became loosened to try to achieve that goal. It's a great goal, but not everybody's cut out for home ownership, right? And what we were doing as an industry, I felt at that time, was sometimes setting people up for failure. And thankfully, we're not in that place anymore. The industry, the way that it's regulated, you know, those sorts of things don't happen, but they can happen. You know, some people. Renting, there's nothing wrong with renting, right? I was just looking at average, you know, I was just with a realtor this weekend and I said, how are you feeling about this year, right? Interest rates are up, right? Ever since the war was started. Oh, well, you know, the cost to rent is still pretty high, right? Mm-hmm. But it is, but it isn't, okay? I was just, in preparation for this meeting, I was looking at the average rental rates in Erie County, according to realtor.com. It's like $1,600 a month. In Buffalo, it's closer to $1,200, $1,300 a month. And that sounds like a lot, and that is a lot historically. But when you think about where interest rates are right now, where the housing supply is right now, you know, that number I quoted a little bit earlier, that $1,300 a month that used to be $600 a month 5 years ago for the average sales price, well, that's principal and interest. That doesn't include taxes and insurance.
Right.
Right. So you have, and then that doesn't include utilities, right?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, no, it's not in everybody's best interest to be a homeowner. And that gets back to where Keisha was going a little bit earlier, that it really is kind of, I need to sit down with you. We need to take a look at everything. We got to talk about what your goals are. We got to see how much money you have saved. We got to take a look at your credit. And then let's come up with a plan for you. So no, it's not for everybody. But what we do need to, what we are attacking as an industry is that gap between home ownership for, you know, white individuals versus non-white individuals. That is something that is still a problem in this country. And the industry is sensitive to it. We're attacking it. And at least at Five Star, I'm really confident with the programs and the pricing and the grants that we have everything that can reach out and support all those different constituencies.
I concur completely.
Yes. So for someone who does think home ownership is for them, but we've got, as you said, higher interest rates. We potentially have higher property taxes on the way with the proposal of our mayor, Sean Ryan. Mm-hmm. It can be discouraging. What do you say to that person who does still want to pursue home ownership? What are some of the pros that outweigh the cons?
Well, I think, you know, naturally, especially if you can get into this market, real estate is showing, you know, it appreciates over time, right? So every time I make a rent payment, I'm helping the landlord become wealthy. I'm not really creating any wealth for myself or for my family members, et cetera, et cetera. So I still am a big pro home ownership guy. My son just bought his first house. He's 25 years old. Him and his girlfriend bought a home together. And I remember telling him, I said, remember, every time you make that payment, you're creating equity. Every time.
Right.
You know, so you are building wealth. You know, a lot of people, a lot of financial planners are probably going to be listening to me. Well, you know, if you put your money over here, that's true, right? There's lots of different ways you can invest your money, okay? But the bottom line is, if you're comparing renting to owning, you're not creating equity when you're renting. You're just flat out not doing it, right? And then you're putting a roof over your head. And like Keisha was saying, you're living hopefully in a neighborhood where you're confident in the school system and things like that, right? So it's really a lifestyle choice, but it's also a smart financial choice.
So my approach really, and I do agree, like a lot of financial advisors will say that, but the reality is, from a working class perspective, home ownership is the easiest way for you to earn wealth, okay? Because the reality is, we will all set the goals to save, to invest, but most working class people, there is a constant battle between earning enough to make it and falling short and sometimes just coming a little bit ahead. And that battle is what dictates whether or not you're able to say, I'm going to invest, you know, every month this amount of money into stocks or different things like that or bonds. So, but with their home, they can invest in the equity of their home every month while at the same time providing a roof for their family. So that actually makes it more realistic for a working class person, which is why you hear so many banners about creating generational wealth, and it's all around buying a home. It's not that that's the only way. It's just it really is one of the most realistic ways for working class people to achieve that. It is. And then the investment in community. The reality is, if you look at a community that's doing well, look at the percentage of homeowners versus renters. If the percentage of homeowners is higher, you're going to see things like school improvement and just the overall improvement of that neighborhood, because now more people living there actually have some skin in the game. And that's where, again, for working class people, it is really going to be to your benefit. So that's why I push home ownership so much amongst working class. It's not that it's the only way for them to generate wealth. It's that it's the most realistic way for them to generate wealth. And yes, it's not right for you, everyone. Definitely not when you come all the time. But sometimes it just takes people getting to that right step. You hit on something very important that I would like to see more of amongst working class people. Your son is 25, investing in real estate. You want to see more young people in working class communities buying homes earlier, buying, you know, multi-units thing. I always push that with them, the multi-units earlier, because this is something that is going to benefit them in the long run.
Yeah, and the way that he was able to achieve that, I mean, they still needed the two incomes. I mean, mm-hmm. It's tough. I mean, you know, he's the exception, not the rule. I just saw a statistic recently. The average age of a first-time home buyer in this market, in our country, is 40 years old. Mm-hmm. 40.
Wow.
That is a very sobering number. Being in the industry as long as I have been in, you know, with segmentation studies and all that kind of stuff that bankers do, you know, that average age is always in the low 30s, right? And to be 40 and climbing, we're not moving in the right direction. But part of that is a lot of these folks are just locked out, right? It's a combination of inflation and supply shortage and interest rates. You know, that is a bad intersection mm-hmm. right now. It's making it really tough on people.
A young professional has college loans that they're coming out of college. They've got these student loans that they have to pay. They have so, like, everything stacked, you know, like the rates and everything. It's just making it feel impossible for them to even consider it.
Yeah. My brother's a financial planner, and he just said, Jim, you cannot believe the amount of people that are carrying around obscene amounts of student debt and how that just anchors your future. I'm dealing that with my daughter right now. She wants to go to a pretty expensive school, and I'm trying to talk her out of it. And there's just this whole kick the can down the road type mentality, like, whatever. And no, not whatever. You know, how does a $700 a month payment sound after you graduate from college, right? Because that's how much your debt's going to cost you.
Yeah, very expensive.
Think about that.
Yeah.
It's obscene.
Absolutely. So, moral of the story, never too early to start thinking about these things, especially when something like home ownership can be a catalyst to generational wealth. Thank you so much, Jim, Takesha. It has been a pleasure speaking with you both. I appreciate this conversation, and hopefully our listeners out there will have more ease in considering home buying if they are first-time home buyers. We hope we've educated you and informed you. Again, thank you so much to our guests
today. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you to our listeners. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media and NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.